Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back. CJ Evolution episode 99. Patrick here. I am so excited to have Sergeant Adam Plantinga on the podcast today. He is the author of 400 Things Cops Know, Street Smart Lessons from a Veteran Patrolman. Adam, thank you so much for coming on, sir. I hope I didn't butcher your last name. I should have asked you before. Did I pronounce it right?
Oh, you know, it's Plantinga, but
Plantinga.
Most people say Plantinga, to the point where when I correct them, I actually say my name is Plantinga. And I had said that on a radio interview not long ago, and my mom listened to it. And she called me up and she said, Adam, you're not pronouncing your own name right. It's Plantinga. You have to pronounce the T. Then I felt like kind of a jerk, and I figured, well, I'm in no position to correct anyone if I can't even say my own name right.
Now, is that Italian?
It's actually Dutch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
it just sounds Italian for some reason.
It does. Yeah, I get that a lot.
Well, what can you tell us, the listener, a little bit about yourself, sir, and how you got in your law enforcement background, really quick, and then how you got into writing about law enforcement.
Sure. Well, I started with the Milwaukee Police Department around 2001. I'm a Midwestern guy, so I went to college in Milwaukee, and I just loved the town, wanted to stay in there and be a cop there. And I loved it. I had 7 years there, and I never would have left, but I met a girl. So yeah,
like we all, yeah, we meet a girl.
That old story. So she had taken a job in San Francisco. I just tagged right along, and we're married now with a couple of kiddos. So that's where I found myself on with the San Francisco Police Department. Mm-hmm. And the writing stuff had just sort of always been there. I was a English major in college, and so I always had the bug. And there's just something. I'm sure this has been your experience too, that you know, police work is such a rich field for mm-hmm. for writing. I mean, there's just so much there. And I just got in the habit of writing down things that happened to me or that happened to my coworkers that I thought were interesting, just sort of jotting down notes, you know, things I learned in the academy, things I learned from my sergeants. Mm-hmm. And after a while, I had a bunch of stuff, and I thought, well, maybe I have something here. So just ended up kind of putting it together in book form, and was fortunate enough to find a publisher for it.
Now, you talked about, Adam, that, I mean, I've read where you were turned down by just so many publishers, right? Until you just kept with it until you found somebody, right?
I did. Yeah. I apparently these people didn't find me nearly as captivating as I find myself, which is always a bummer, but. Yeah, about 91 literary agents turned me down. Maybe it was 90.
Wow.
And then I found an agent, and he was good. He did due diligence, but I couldn't quite make a deal happen. So I just approached sort of smaller independent publishers on my own, and I found one in Fresno, California called Linden Publishing, Quill Driver Books, and I kind of tricked them into putting it out. So, I mean, yeah, it's just kind of old mule stubbornness. I just kind of kept at it long past any sort of reasonable point. And I'm glad I did. It kind of worked out.
Well, it's kind of cool too, because, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's, you know, perseverance. It's not giving up, which is, we talk about it, you know, a lot in the show, you know, about just keep on plugging away and it'll happen, and don't get discouraged if it doesn't happen right away. And I love what you said about police work, because, I mean, you've heard the saying, Adam, it's the greatest show on earth.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no day, you know, is the same. I mean, I don't know if you're on the street anymore. I'm not on the street anymore. I kind of work in administration, but I remember when I was on the street, man, it was great. I mean, a lot of, you know, you see people, you know, again, you know this, you see people at their worst and worst of human behavior, but there's a lot of fun stuff that go along with the job, right?
Oh yeah. Some of this stuff.
It's very humorous and you got to have a sense of humor. I'm not saying enjoying and capitalizing on suffering. I'm not saying that, but you know, cops have to have a sense of humor, man. We're always cutting up with each other.
Yeah, some of it's sort of that black humor. But, you know, you see some things that are so ridiculous that, you know, you get in the squad car with your partner afterwards, and, you know, nobody can hear you, and that's kind of your time, and you just sort of process what happened, and,
yeah.
you know, you have a good laugh over it, because it's either that or some of these things, it's either laugh or cry. And
mm-hmm. Now, I read somewhere where you said, why do real police, or why do real cops hate police hats?
Yeah.
why do they hate Pats? I mean, enlighten everybody, Adam.
Because you're exactly
right. I mean, we don't wear hats. You know, I have a dress hat that I have to wear when I'm, dressed up. But I don't like wearing a hat.
No, it's kind of the you have sort of this. At least it was with Milwaukee, and to a certain extent, San Francisco. You have sort of this formal looking police hat, and sometimes it sort of has a tendency to sort of puff out a little bit, so you look like a French baker. You're chasing the guy and it falls off, or it's you go into some sweltering apartment and you take it off and then you forget you left it there. It's just sort of another accoutrement that it's easy to lose track of, and there's so much stuff you have to keep track of already.
Exactly. What's the policy of San Francisco Police Department? Do you guys have to? You have to wear that on duty or what?
You know, with Milwaukee, you had to wear it. San Francisco, only if you're on the footbeat. There's certainly times when the police hat's what you want to have on. If you're clearing a building, it sort of identifies you as a cop to, to bat sure. guys into your coworkers. But all in all, it's not a favorite. Plus, the most important thing is sometimes, it can mess your hair up. And you gotta look good out there.
Yeah, look good, man. How was your book? I'm curious. I mean, how was, because cops. I mean, cops are brutal. I mean, especially to other cops. I mean, how was your book received by, I'm sure, I mean, there was a mix, right? I mean, some people loved it, some people didn't like it. I mean, I don't know, I'm assuming, but you tell us.
You're right, cops are brutal. I also don't think a whole lot of us read that much, so I think it's remained unread.
If it has pictures, that's cool. Yeah, we could just kind of look at the pictures.
But, I got to say, my coworkers have been pretty kind. When I wrote it, I was careful to, I sent it the rough draft to a couple of cop friends to make sure there was nothing in there that would, embarrass anyone other than myself. And that I got things right, and that there wasn't anything in there that would sort of, be a discredit to the force or compromise any ongoing investigation. So I kind of vetted it. People have been kind. I've had cops at San Francisco come up to me and ask me to sign it, which I always get a big kick out of.
Yeah.
I've gotten cops from other jurisdictions reach out to me and let me know that they found it helpful, and that makes my week. There are folks who will tell me, you should have left that out of your book, you should have put this one in, and I listen to those folks, because that's good feedback, but sometimes in the back of my mind I'm thinking, hey pal, write your own book. this one's mine, and I'm pretty happy with it.
Now, how did the brass? I mean, obviously you wrote the book, so obviously they were cool with it. But were they like, oh yeah, Adam, go ahead, do what you want, or were they kind of skeptical too when you first came up?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. And again, I kind of wrote it in such a way that I was hoping I wouldn't be inviting a lot of sort of scrutiny from upper administration. But it wasn't the case that I needed sort of permission to write it. With San Francisco, like with many jurisdictions, I think you have to sort of get permission to do what's called secondary employment. So if you want to take a second job, then you have to kind of get that cleared. And I had to get it, not writing the book cleared, but just sort of, doing book events. And that was just sort of a rubber stamp. So, yeah, I've had supervisors read it and give me good feedback, too. That was one thing I was very careful about. I didn't want to, I'm still a working cop.
Trying to
be sort of overly controversial or sort of court that kind of thing. And so far so good.
Yeah, and I'm the same way. I mean, you have to be careful sometimes of what you're talking about, because it is a reflection on, you, not only you, but the department. You talk about the 90-10 rule. What is that, Adam?
It's something, it's sort of this rule of thumb where, I got this in the academy already. 90% of people are decent and law-abiding in the ways that count, and 10% aren't. And when you're a cop working the street, you deal with that 10% 90% of the time. And I'm sure you've seen that. That really tends to color your worldview. I mean, like you said, you know, people call you often on the worst day of their life. They don't call you when everything's going great. So you can sometimes get sort of a jaded view of society because you're kind of the garbage man in there just trying to clean up.
Yeah. And I talked about this a lot in the show where, for me, it has helped me tremendously to have friends outside of law enforcement.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's so great. You know, it's so good. Not that I'm, you know, I love my cop friends and everything, but it's really helped me a lot to have friends outside of law enforcement.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, like you, I love cops, but, you know, sometimes when you get a bunch of cops together, you tend to just kind of sit around and talk about how effed up everything is. And
yeah, exactly.
It's good to have some balance and perspective and, you know, kind of see how sort of normal sort of general society lives and operates and just kind of get that vantage point.
Now, how big is San Fran? I mean, how big is the police department? How many sworn?
I think we're supposed to be staffed at around 2,100, and we're a little under that. Milwaukee was a little less than that, but they're about comparable cities.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are some of the biggest, I mean, well, the biggest issues that the department is facing, you know, in San Francisco? Because I think a lot of outsiders kind of look in and say, I mean, that's just a wonderful place. Is there, you know, it's what happens in San Francisco. But obviously there's crime, but what's the biggest, or some of the biggest issues you guys are facing?
Right. You know, for its size, it actually has I think per capita, a lower homicide rate than maybe some other cities of its size. But, you know, sort of the issues that most metropolitan areas are dealing with, the gangs are fairly entrenched. We have, you know, it's just a devastating amount of street drugs. I mean, you know, neighborhoods where every corner you have another dealer. And then all the stuff that feeds into, you know, addicts breaking into cars to find stuff to sell to sustain their fix. There's a widespread homeless problem in San Francisco, which often becomes sort of the problem of the police because, you know, if you're a homeowner and you look outside your window and there's a tent city on the sidewalk in front of you.
That's a quality of life issue.
Yeah, yeah. So, there's needles out there and people are relieving themselves. You don't want to walk your kid to school past that. So they call the police and that's legit. But, you know, there's more of them than there are of us. And so you end up, you know, dealing with homeless issues a lot more than maybe you sort of expected when you signed up to be a cop. When in fact, that's sort of an all hands on deck issue with housing and social workers and drug treatment. You know, you cannot arrest your way out of that problem. It's not even close.
Yeah. And one thing we've seen, at least where I'm at in Colorado, Adam, and I'm sure you have in San Francisco, is this kind of the alarming rate of calls for people with mental illness. You know, people want to commit suicide and all kinds of stuff. And it's just gone through the roof, at least here in Colorado. You know, I'm assuming here there in San Francisco, too.
Yeah, you and, you know, if you combine mental illness with homelessness, with drug addiction, I mean, that's, you know, what do you do with that person? I don't I mean, there's no magic wand. That's just that's a tough population to reach. And there's, you know, like you have on your end, we have a lot of those folks and they're not doing well.
Yeah. Well, let's shift gears back again to the book. Can you give us a few of the 400 things every cop should know? I mean, there's a lot of them, 400, but yeah, I don't know, some of the highlights.
Well, we covered I feel like we covered the police hat. You know,
police hats are funny.
Some of the things I get into is I'm always fascinated between the difference between Hollywood and reality. That's been your experience too. You see some TV show where some 90-pound cop kicks down a door with one kick. In reality, I mean, I read about this in the book. There was one time when I think it took me between 30 and 40 kicks to get a door down. And I knew that because there was a sergeant next to me counting out loud encouragingly.
Keep going, man.
Yeah. Right. I get into some you know, things about working with the community, things about working with juveniles, and how that can be, you know, it's hard to sort of stay optimistic when you're dealing with, you know, troubled kids because, you know, kind of like the 90-10 rule, you're not dealing with the kid who's college bound.
Sure.
You know, you're dealing with the kid who, you know, is at least one parent is locked up and the other parents might be strung out of dope and,
yeah.
You know, they live in a neighborhood where they go to bed hearing gunshots, you know, their school is chaos. You know, how do you expect someone like that to be sort of a healthy, functioning adult? I mean, it's
yeah.
It's like trying to fight their way out of quicksand. I talk about that those things a bit in the book.
Yeah, and I mean, and for people listening, you know this, most of them, and you know it. I mean, it's, you know, we do that every day. I mean, you go out there and it's the same. Yeah, I mean, it's just the same day, and that wears on you.
Yeah,
you know. It does wear on you. I mean, and that's why it's important to have those outlets, you know, where you can decompress. And, you know, I'm sure you're a family man just like me. And, you know, you come home and you just kind of, you know, you spend time with the family and you kind of decompress. And you get up and you do it again.
Yeah, it's good to come home to loved ones and sort of recharge for the next day. You gotta have that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so important. What, Adam, you've been doing this for a long time. I mean, what do you think some of the biggest challenges? I mean, we all know the environment of law enforcement, you know, now. Heather McDonald, we were talking about that before she was on. She was talking about the Ferguson effect. I'm sure you've heard of it.
Yeah.
What do you think some of the biggest challenges are facing law enforcement today? I mean, there's so many of them. I mean, what's your take on it? What's your perspective?
Well, I think, you know, generally speaking, maybe some time ago, you know, the general public would tend to believe the police account of a critical incident.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not so much the case anymore. And some of that's because, you know, you've seen, and I've seen police videos where the official police account doesn't match up with the video that the public is seeing. Mm-hmm. So we have some work to do on that end. But we got to, I think, reclaim a lot of that ground that we've lost. And one of the things that San Francisco is doing, and I think is sort of nationwide now, is, you know, we have body cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I mean, you know, they're not perfect. They're just a tool on your tool belt. But I think that that can go a long way to showing people that this is what happened and this is why we did what we did. And, you know, when you're on camera, you tend to be on your best behavior. And that's,
sure.
I think that's kind of what you want. You want cops on your best behavior and you want the camera to show the criminal doing the things that criminals do.
Mm-hmm.
Because people don't take our word for things anymore.
Yeah, it's amazing how that, I mean, I agree with you, but it's just amazing in, you know, how it's just changed, you know, over the years so much where, and look, I've always said, and you know this, Adam, there's some cops out there that shouldn't be cops. There's some bad cops, but I think the overwhelming majority of men and women out there are doing a very difficult job. They have families. They're, you know, they don't put a uniform on every, you know, every day to go out there and just, you know, throw it away.
Right.
But yeah, it's just amazing how we've come to that point, like you were talking about, where, you know, it used to be where the cops, you know, recollection of the events or what he or she was saying was okay, it was accepted. But now you're exactly right. It's almost turned completely upside down. And, you know, I think cops are afraid now. They're not as proactive, I know, in my department as they used to be, just because they're afraid of being a headline.
Right, and I've seen some of that too. I mean, you have cops who, I mean, you know, the ones I think who are, you know, still have the fire in the belly, no matter what is going on in society, they're going to do their job and they're going to be proactive and make those good sort of solid arrests. But
sure.
People who are kind of on the fence, you know, they're thinking to themselves, well, you know what, at this point, I'm just going to do just enough not to get written up or fired. Because I don't want to deal with the citizen complaint. I don't want to deal with the media, the intense media pressure that comes with being involved in, say, an officer-involved shooting. They just kind of back away because maybe they've seen a coworker that went through that, or it's happened to them. They just they think, you know, it's simply not worth it.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. And hopefully, you know, it changes, you know, down the road. Is there any other books in your future? You have this successful book out there. Is there any other books in your future? You got to write another one, man. I mean, you got to do something else now, right?
You know, I don't. Other than writing, I don't have a lot of hobbies. You know, I don't hunt. I don't fish. I don't have the ability to fix anything in the house when it breaks, you know, much to my wife's disgust. So if I have some downtime, I'm either taking my kids to the park or I'm writing something. So I've got something in the hopper. It's sort of another nonfiction book that touches on some of the same things as the first one.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a rich field to mine. And, you know, a lot of this stuff, and I always like to emphasize this, the first book and the one I'm working on now, it's not stuff that I just sort of figured out on my own. Or if I did figure it out by myself, I often did so the hard way. You know, I've had some great teachers out there.
And, of course, yeah.
I just steal all the best stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause there's some cops out there that are just naturals. They're just wizards. And I really respect them, and I just take good notes when they do smart things.
Oh, yeah, and it's, like I said, the majority of cops out there, brave men and women, are doing the right thing. And they're, yeah, they're just amazing, amazing people. And I'm like you. I mean, I was, you know, I'm fortunate throughout my career that where I've had some just great people I've looked up to. I still look up to them that mentored me and helped me become, you know, the officer I am today.
Yeah, you got it. You know, it's sort of that... That old saying, many of us are smarter than one of us. You got to reach out and use your resources.
Well, Adam, how can people find you, sir? Well, how can they find your book and social media, if you have it? Can you give that to the people?
You know, I'm kind of low-tech. I sort of delight in being low-tech in sort of a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that's all about. But I don't have a website, and I'm not on... Facebook, but I am on LinkedIn. So if anyone,
that's a good site. Good site.
Yeah. Other than that, you know, I think my email is on LinkedIn. So I've had people just sort of cold email me with questions. You know, writers,
sure.
People in the community, and I love getting that stuff. I'm happy to do what I can to field that.
And book, where can they find your book?
You know, the book is. I think it's the kind of thing you can find in Barnes & Noble or in the local bookstore. Amazon is always a way to go. Plus, you know, if you want to save $11, you can just get it at the library. And in these lean economic times, why wouldn't you?
Well, Adam, sir, I appreciate you so much for coming on the show. Please, everybody, go out there, pick up his book, 400 Things Every Cop Should Know, written by a veteran police officer, Adam. Thank you so much, sir, for coming on. Truly is a pleasure having you on the show.
Patrick, thanks for having me, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast, and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.